and Carroll Area Development Corporation. I'm excited to bring this candidate forum to you this evening. I'll be here with our moderator, Adam Schwerz, throughout the night. Joining us is Hubert Hageman, doing our timekeeping, and members of the Carroll Chamber of Commerce Legislative Committee. Thanks to all of you for helping put our event together this evening. We're pleased to bring you tonight the candidates for State Senator District 6, Mark Segebart and Nick Suriani, for State Representative District 12, Brian Best and Ken Myers, for County Supervisor District 1, Neil Bach, County Supervisor District 3, Eugene Miners, County Supervisor District 5, Richard Ruggles, for County Auditor, Courtney Earlbeck, and for County Sheriff, Ken Pingree is here, and Bill Cron was not able to attend this evening. These are the names that you'll see on the ballot Tuesday, November 8th in Carroll. Our purpose here this evening is to help you get to know the candidates and to allow the candidates the opportunity to present their views on the issues that are important to the Carroll residents. Our thank you to all the candidates for being here this evening. Soon they'll introduce themselves in their opening statements. The forum is being broadcast live tonight on KCIM 1380 in Carroll. And also, listeners at home are able to call in or text in your questions to 712-790-3584. Those of you in the audience, if you have a question, our committee members have some pens and paper to bring questions forward. We do have some questions that were submitted ahead of the event this evening, so we'll do our best to get them all worked into the time we have allotted. We have committed to ending the event by 8:30 p.m. Now I'll turn it over to our moderator, Adam Schwerz.
Thank you, Shannon. First, I'd like to start off by thanking everybody for being here in the chamber for putting on this great event. And next, I'd like to move into the guidelines or general rules for the forum. All candidates will have 2 minutes for an opening statement. The order of opening and closing statements has been determined by drawing before the forum. Candidates must treat each other civilly and with respect. Personal attacks and endorsing other candidates will not be allowed. The floor will open for questions. Questions will be asked in the following manner, provided in advance or during the forum, will be screened and asked by the moderator, myself, who will call on those individuals those in attendance to ask questions directly for any or all candidates. Candidates called to answer a question will have 1 minute to respond. A candidate may elect not to answer a question. I will have the option of asking a clarifying question, giving the candidate 30 seconds to respond. Written questions from the audience will be screened and submitted to myself. The forum will be simulcast on KCIM 1380 AM radio station. Questions may be submitted during the broadcast by calling 712-790-3584. Questions were delivered or sent to the chamber office in addition to before the forum. All candidates will have 1 minute for closing remarks, and strict adherence to the time schedule is necessary. When 15 seconds remain, the timekeeper will hold a red card in the air, and a bell will be rung at the end of your time. We received several questions in advance and will do our best to work through those questions as the audience calls in. During the forum, I'd like each of you to announce your names so the listeners at home are able to know who's answering the question. And I would direct each of you to speak to the audience and not to myself. And with that, I would like to begin with opening comments, and we'll start with Courtney Earlbeck.
Good evening. Thank you to the Carroll Chamber for hosting this candidate forum. For those of you who don't know me, I am Courtney Earlbeck, and I am excited to be running for Carroll County Auditor. I have lived and worked in Carroll for over 20 years. I live southeast of Carroll with my husband Scott and our three children. I began my employment with the Auditor's Office in 2007. Having previously worked for an accounting firm, I was appointed and then elected to the position of County Auditor in 2014. Over the past 3 years, I've enjoyed learning all aspects of the auditor position. The auditor's office is diversified, and some of the key responsibilities include Budget Central for the following government entities: county, schools, city, townships, agricultural extension, emergency management, E911 service board, and county assessor. Clerk to the Board of Supervisors, Commissioner of Elections, County Register of Voters, Custodian of Election Records, County's Financial Officer and Tax Accountant, Custodian of the Courthouse under the direction of the Board of Supervisors, Overseer of the County Plats, Payroll and Human Resources Manager, and various other duties. The County Auditor position is both a rewarding and challenging position. With the assistance of an excellent and knowledgeable staff, I will continue to provide accurate and reliable service to the citizens of Carroll County.
Thank you, Courtney. Next, we have for the sheriff position, Ken Pingree.
Thank you, Adam. I would like to take this minute to introduce myself. My name is Kenneth Pingree, and I am currently the sheriff of Carroll County, having served in that capacity since Doug Bass's retirement in March of this year. I was born and raised in Coon Rapids and graduated from high school there in 1985. I am married to my wife, Julie, of 26 years, and we have two sons, Will and Levi, both of whom are cadets at the United States Military Academy at West Point. Will is in his senior year, and Levi is a sophomore. I am very proud to say I am a fifth-generation Pingree from Coon Rapids. My parents, Mark and Sandra, both still reside there, as do Julie and I. I started my law enforcement career by obtaining an associate's degree in criminal justice in 1989. I spent 10 years as a deputy sheriff in Audubon County before coming to Carroll County in early 2001. I have a combined 26 years in law enforcement, all of it at the county level. In my 16 years with the Carroll County Sheriff's Office, I obtained the rank of sergeant, and in 2007 was promoted to chief deputy, a position I held until being appointed to sheriff by the Board of Supervisors after being recommended by retiring Sheriff Doug Bass. As chief deputy, my primary responsibilities included supervising the jail and for the past 4 years overseeing the communications center and its budget. I am proud to say that during that time, we did not have a single major incident in the jail. No escapes, no suicides, and no lawsuits. I also worked on many cases during that time. The Carroll County Sheriff's Office is a small department, and each member is asked to fill a variety of roles. The sheriff is more than a leader. He has to be an active member of the team, required to act on a moment's notice. It is not at all unusual for the sheriff to arrive at a scene first and overcome physical barriers. My education, professional experience, and capabilities make me the most qualified person to take on the position of sheriff. Carroll County is a shining star in western Iowa, and this is a very attractive area to live, work, and raise a family. I have always and will always do my best to make sure it stays that way. I will have an open-door policy and be willing to meet and talk with anyone. I am asking each and every resident of Carroll County for their vote on November 8th, and I thank you for that.
Thank you, Ken. Candidate Cron is not able to be here with us this evening. He did, however, provide a letter that he requested us to read. His letter, dated October 12th, states, "Thank you for the invitation to attend the forum. Unfortunately, I am unable to attend as recently completed chemotherapy and radiation treatments. The treatments are going well, but under the advice of my physician, I am forced to limit my public exposure at this time due to the potential of infection. Having been actively engaged in law enforcement in Carroll County for 40 years, I want to assure everyone that as your sheriff, I will continue to provide the same dedication and service as I always have. I look forward to getting back to work as soon as possible. Sincerely, Bill Cron." Next up, we will have Richard Ruggles, candidate for county supervisor.
My name is Richard Ruggles. I'm a candidate for the county supervisor of District 5. My wife, Julie, and I moved here in 2011, and we've also lived in the county for over 36 years. I want to thank the chamber for the opportunity here to give some of my thoughts on the pressing issues that I think the board might be facing. The jail is going to be obviously a most pressing one, and it's going to take a lot of information to figure out the pros, the cons, the site, the size, and any if there's going to be any extras. Much of the debate will be coming on these issues, the long-term functionality and the expense of the facility will be at the forefront. The next thing will probably be the driver's license and the motorcycle and the CDLs. The driver's license we kind of have solved a little bit, but we do have some issues there yet. The other two, I think there's going to be a lot of debate on that, whether we do the CDL, whether we not do the CDL. Motorcycle license, probably the same. Cybersecurity, courthouse security, wellness programs, agency relocation, just to name a few. Those are going to be things that are going to be hitting fairly soon. I'm looking forward to working with the supervisors and all the heads of all the departments, and with your support on November 8th, I hope to be an active voice for you.
Thank you, Rich. Our next candidate, Neil Bach for County Supervisor, District 1.
Good evening. First of all, I want to thank the Chamber of Commerce for putting on this forum. Also want to thank Carroll High School for furnishing the facility here, and also 1380 KCM Radio and the local paper for coverage. But most of all, I want to thank the people of Carroll County who are attending or tuned in to this broadcast. My name is Neil Bach. My wife, Rhonda, and I have great love for Carroll County. We've been married for almost 37 years. We have two married children, and we've been blessed with three grandchildren with more good news on the way. My top priority has always been the people of Carroll County. I want to hear your concerns, answer your questions, and be very accountable to you. My next priority is the budget. The people of Carroll County work hard, and they work hard to earn their paycheck and their money. I don't believe in taxing any more than what is needed, and I feel that county should be very accountable with our spending habits. The county should be run like a business. A third priority is the secondary roads. Safety, of course, is a big concern, but it's also secondary roads are also imperative for business and agriculture. And I just want to say finally that it's an honor and a privilege to serve the people of Carroll County. Thank you.
Thank you, Neil. Next is County Supervisor Candidate Eugene Miners for District 3.
First of all, I'd like to thank the Chamber for offering us this opportunity and the media for the coverage. And also, I would like to thank the youth that is here tonight. I'm very happy to see the Mono youth that's in the audience tonight. I've been a resident of Carroll County all my life. I've been married to my lovely wife for 46 years, Diane. We have three children, two daughters, Michelle Kelly of Grand Island, Nebraska, Mindy Wittruck of Carroll, and our son Mike of Ankeny. Along that, we have six grandchildren, ages 21 to 4. I was employed in the ag sector for 35 years. As the end of this year, I will have 45 years in local government, 8 years as city clerk, 21 years as mayor of Templeton, and 16 years as county supervisor. I currently serve as second vice president of the supervisors affiliate of the State Association of Counties. I serve the Carroll Area Development Corporation, the Yes Center at Cherokee, which is a juvenile detention center, and president of New Opportunities, and is set on the County and City of Carroll Communications, and also currently set on the Jail Study Committee. I have been on the Templeton Area Development Corporation board for 24 years. In this time of continuous changes brought on by federal, state, and even local, I will work for the best interests of all the citizens in Carroll County. work for sound fiscal budgets. I will work toward the growth and prosperity of Carroll County. And as regionalization takes place, strive to make Carroll County the center of that regionalization. I will strive for continued and additional partnerships between Carroll County, other counties, private sector, cities, and other agencies. I will be fully committed to the citizens of Carroll County.
Thank you, Gene. Next, we have candidate Nick Suriani.
Good evening. My name is Nick Suriani. I am running for State Senate, District 6. First off, I just want to thank everybody for coming out. It really, really means a lot to everybody up here, I know, to see everybody in the audience and all the listeners at home. I know there's been tons and tons of eyes on this election, so I know everybody up here is definitely wanting to make sure that all of your answers are, all your questions are answered. But first off, I am 26. I live up in BB County. District 6 includes BB County as well as Sac and Carroll County, so I'm down here visiting you guys. So I'm glad to be here. I am a libertarian. I believe very, very much in fiscal responsibility. I'm very, very economically conservative, but I'm also socially accepting. I really believe that all of my standpoints really bring out the most limited government as possible and giving everybody as much freedom as possible without hurting anybody else. So once again, glad to be here. Thank you all for coming out.
Thank you, Nick. Next, we have Senator Mark Sigebart for State Senate.
Thank you, Adam. Good evening, everyone. My name is Mark Sigebart, and it's been a great honor and privilege for me to be your state senator for the last 4 years, and thank you for that opportunity. I was born in Crawford County in 1950. I'm 66 years old and married to my wife, Kathy, for 44 years. We have two children, a daughter, Martha, and a son, Alex, who lives here in Carroll, and two great-grandsons that live in Green Bay, Wisconsin, unfortunately. I've been farming in the Vail area for the last 44 years, and I graduated from Iowa State University in 1972 with a Bachelor of Science degree in forestry and land management. I was a county supervisor in Crawford County for 16 years, and I've served one term in the Senate, so I'm running for my second term. Now, this is what I believe. I am pro-life. I believe life begins at conception and ends at natural death. I'm a defender of the Bill of Rights, and I've been endorsed by the NRA. I'm pro-traditional marriage, which is one man to one woman. I support use of cannabis for medical uses only, which is Iowa's current law, which I voted for back in 2014, I think it was. I'm pro-business, and I've been endorsed by the Iowa Association of Business and Industry. I'm pro-ag and been endorsed by the Iowa Farm Bureau as a friend of agriculture. I supported the gas tax increase in 2015, and I look to turn Highway 30 into a four-lane highway. Thought I'd get that in there, Adam. I've been endorsed by the Iowa Corn Growers Association. I support the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy and the Clean Water Initiative. And I served in the last 4 years on the Human Resources Committee and the Health and Human Services Appropriations Budget Subcommittee, and also the Veterans Affairs Committee, which I'm the ranking member of. I'm also the ranking member of the Appropriations Committee. And I believe in term limits. Two terms in the Senate. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Next, we have our state representative candidate, Ken Myers.
Thank you for inviting me tonight. My name is Ken Myers, and my path to being in that brought me here tonight is not the typical path. I'm not interested in partisan politics. I've been in public safety in public service pretty much my entire adult career. I've been a paramedic. I worked over in Denison for almost 9 years, both full-time and part-time. I worked on the Denison Police Department for 5 years, and I've served Carroll County for the last 14 years as a deputy sheriff. The reason that I'm running is over the past several years. I've watched a decline in the mental health system, a decline in public safety services, and the more education that I'm getting on the school systems, the school funding, and education systems also needs to be worked on. I have two grown children. Both of them are in college. I'm also engaged to Kathy Orton, who works here in Carroll and has four wonderful children. And I look forward to the opportunity to answer any questions or to serve the public. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Now we have Representative Brian Best.
Thank you. I'm Brian Best, and I reside in Glidden. I was elected 2 years ago to be your state representative. I'll tell you a little bit about my background. I was born at St. Anthony's Hospital and was raised on a farm south of Glidden and still lived on the same farm when I graduated from high school. I moved away from this area for about 12 years after college and lived in Kansas City. My wife and I wanted to get our kids back into a smaller school and a smaller environment. We were blessed in that we were able to come back here and live. It's a decision that I'm happy that we made. I love rural Iowa. I love the schools we have here. I love the small town communities. It's what makes us who we are. I think my contribution to you, if I'm elected in the next 2 years, would be to fight for rural Iowa. As Democrats and Republicans, it's easy to be in a vacuum. It's easy just to support what you believe your party wants you to do. I hope I've resisted that, and I think I have. There's many things that you have to do for your rural folks. You have to do for your community, and you can't do that as a partisan. You do it as an elected official who supports your district. And since I've been elected, I've had the pleasure of meeting a lot of folks in forums and through the things that we do here locally. And I've made a lot of friends who I don't believe probably voted for me the first time. But the beauty of our district is that in the end, we all want what's best for our district. And what we do, I believe, is we think of things that unite us, not the things that divide us. And so with that, I thank you for coming out tonight. And again, to the young folks out there, thanks for coming because you are our future. So thanks for taking the interest in doing this.
Thank you, Brian. I'm going to let you just keep that mic because we're going to start at this end of the table with some state and house questions, and then we'll work our way back down through the races. And based upon the drawing before the forum, I believe you'll have the mic to start. So our first question. In the past few years, many small school districts have faced consolidation. What do you plan to do to help rural school districts so they can continue to exist? Brian?
Thank you. The one thing that's very important, I believe, is valuing what education does for us. And at this, in our K through 12s in this district, I know we've seen the heartbreak of what happened at Arweva, and that's tough to take. The main thing we need to do is we need to get more human beings in this area. And at some point, the numbers just don't work out. One thing we can do is we can continue to fund education. Education last year got 77% of the new growth that the state had to offer. I felt like that was fair. The other 23% went to everybody else. And so I think we are doing the best we can for K through 12. Another thing that I very much believe we need to do is the money that goes to the schools, instead of having all these different silos of where the money goes, sometimes schools need a resource. They can't get to it because that silo doesn't have any money in it. So what needs to happen is the schools need to have a little bit of more flexibility to use the money that they get so they can use it where they need it. Nobody knows best, or nobody knows better than schools where that money needs to go. I think the state takes on too much of that responsibility at this time.
Thank you. And candidate representative Ken Meyer.
Thank you. Education, admittedly, is one of my weaker points. I did have a chance to meet with some school board members. I also had a chance to meet with the superintendent of one of the area schools in the district. One of their biggest concerns is that, in violation of state law, the legislature has failed to establish a budget 18 months prior to the beginning of the school year, and it is based on partisan politics. Another issue that they're talking about is in the rural schools, one of your highest expenses is the transportation costs. In the metro school systems, it's about $30 per student. In the rural areas, it's about $100 a student, correction, $1,000 per student to transport the students back and forth to school. The education portion is a part that I need to get more knowledgeable about, and I think something can be done to keep the rural areas with the money and staffing that they need.
Thank you, Ken. I would like to just move right into our Senate candidates and have Senator Mark Sigebart respond.
Thanks, Adam. What are we going to do for small schools? Mr. Myers here spoke of the transportation issue is a large one for rural schools because of that big discrepancy of what it costs to transport kids in the rural areas versus the more urban areas. And as he said, there can be a very large discrepancy in what your tax dollars spend. If it's all spent for transportation, it takes money away from the other operations of the school and the teacher's pay and classroom expenses and that sort of thing. So last year we were close to getting some work done on the silo funding. That transportation is a silo fund. We were very close to getting some freeing some of that up and equalizing that, and I'm going to support that this year, and that will certainly help our rural schools. And I came from Arweva, and they're going to be there. We said they were going to be gone when I was there, which is more toes than I can count at this point. So they'll be around. They've got a way of lasting. Thank you.
Thank you. Senate candidate Nick Sirianni.
Thank you. It's a tough thing. We see it more and more around here, being smaller rural communities. We see schools that everybody has attended through the generations disappear and become more consolidated schools, and I think it is a growing concern. One thing I want to do is fight for keeping funding in the state. I really want to fight against sending the state's tax money to the federal government and having them dole it back to us if we meet certain regulations and keep that. I really want to fight to keep the money in the state because every dollar that goes out of the state, they take that in the federal government and they say, okay, you get so much back if you meet this, so much back if you meet this, and then they keep the rest for expenses on their end. I really think we need to fight against that, and we need to fight more for keeping money locally and in the state.
Thank you, Nick. I'm going to change gears here as we move down towards the supervisors. And the question we have for the supervisors, do you support the county taking on the CDL testing services at no cost to individuals seeking a CDL? Part two of that question, if not, what is your solution? And based upon our draw, we will start out with Eugene Miners.
We are still studying the thing, but as currently I sit here right now, I am supportive of doing CDLs on a limited basis. And I'll tell you, part of our objective by state code is economic development. And if we have a business here in town that's heavily in CDLs, and they have to go and send them somewhere else to pay $300 or whatever to get their CDL, and where they can go to a competing firm in Ames, can go out here and send his person down to driver's testing station and get by just for the cost of the CDL. I don't think that's right. That's an economic disadvantage to our people in this county. I don't know that we can do it a full time, but I do think we need to do it on a part-time basis.
Thank you, Gene. Next, we have Supervisor Neil Bach.
Okay, in regards to CDL, I think we need to take it one step at a time. We got short notice. We ended up with driver's license. I certainly appreciate the cooperation from the treasurer's office to do that. And they're not even running it right now. The DOT is running the driver's license thing out of their office. And it'll be about March at the earliest when they take it over. Before we make a commitment for CDLs, I think we need to see how we do with the driver's license. We need to get that established quite sound. I understand and agree with what Gene said, that it's unfair that some people in some communities can get it free because they have a DOT station and we do not. So I will certainly consider the CDL. However, there's also the option of a different entity here in town. I believe DMACC is considering it. And if a private entity or somebody like DMACC wants to take that over, I don't know if it would be right for the county to compete with them for that. So I'm hoping someone else takes it over. If not, I'd be glad to give it very serious consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Neil. Next, we have candidate Rich Ruggles.
The CDL, that's a good one because if we do decide to do it, we're looking at a truck, we're looking at housing it, we're looking at a lot of expense. That part bothers me a little bit, but the thing that bothers me more is the local farmer's son or daughter that would like to come in and get a CDL. She has to spend a lot of money to do it and go someplace else. I think, yes, we want to get our driver's license in order first, and I want to make sure it's functioning very well. Then I want to look at the CDLs. I think we need to throw all the pros, all the cons out. Right now, I would probably be leaning more with Neil that if we got a DMACC or some private entity wants to do it, I think that's wonderful. But I also think that we need to continue to use our lobbying power with the state level to get this playing field a lot more level.
Thank you, Rich. Now we'll move on to the sheriff candidates. And for that, I guess we've only got one candidate this evening to respond. But Sheriff Pingree, our question is list the two most important issues to you that you plan to address if when elected.
The first one that's always been a priority of mine since the day I started in law enforcement is taking illegal drugs off the street. Methamphetamine right now is kind of the ruination of our country, at least in the rural areas. It leads to theft, health problems that the public winds up dealing with in the long run, incarceration time, all that stuff. It just snowballs into a big mess that we eventually wind up paying for. The second thing I'd like to address is with the closing of all the mental health institutions in the state, we have a lot of people with mental health problems getting stuck in the county jail. I've been currently working with the Rolling Hills Mental Health Institute, or Coalition, I should say, to provide free training or free mental health services to folks in jail that need it. They do come in, it doesn't cost anything, and they do provide some therapy for these people.
Thank you. Auditor Earlbeck, we have a question for you. What are your two top priorities for the next term, and how do you plan to address them?
I'd say the main priority is the continued use of our new software. That was a big change in our office, so we had our first taxes go out with that software this year, and continuing training and working towards that, and continuing additional training in the office for various payroll and human resource development. We're looking at possibly not adding some additional duties to staff, and feel that training was brought to our attention that some human resources should be addressed within the county. So that's a very strong area I think we need to work on and just continue to provide the services that we have with elections and dealing with the public.
Thank you. I'm going to come back down here to this end and move right into our second question. Representative Best. The governor has stated that the transition to Medicaid managed care is going well in stopping fraud. Since health care providers across the state are being paid incorrectly according to signed contracts, what do you plan to do to ensure health care providers are being paid correctly?
oversight is going to be very important when we get back into session. As a business owner who deals with, in the past, dealt with Medicaid, the traditional Medicaid that we had in the state of Iowa, and now dealing with the MCOs, I'm feeling the same pain as everybody else out there is. And the one thing that that I understand that the governor felt we needed to do is we needed to get it under control, because the spending was really taking the oxygen out of everything else we do in this state. 11% per year was really crippling us. On the other hand, I do believe that the MCOs, I'm disappointed in the MCOs. I'm disappointed in the fact that they came in and made all these promises and at the same time are having a real hard time just getting basic things done. And when it starts to affect providers who can't stay in business, small providers, then I think something needs to be done. They need to be held accountable, and when we go back there, we really need to tell them that they need to start doing their job.
All right, thank you. Candidate Myers.
The limited information I have on the privatization of Medicaid essentially has been a catastrophic nightmare. I was at a meeting a couple weeks ago in Des Moines, and there was a gal there that had attended an Iowa Hospital Association meeting, and he said they are now hiring clerical staff just to file the appeals with this company that's taking care of the Medicaid payments. Some hospitals are now on their sixth and seventh appeal and being denied their claims. I think one of the biggest missteps by the legislature in the past was allowing this company to take over and denying them legislative oversight.
Thank you. Senator Sigebart?
This is a loaded question because, you see, the committee I'm on is called Human Resources, which deals with Medicaid and Health and Human Service. So for me, this has been a nightmare since the governor announced we were going to go to the managed care system, which we've been doing for many years. We had a company called Magellan that did work for the state for quite a while. But no state has ever jumped in and done the full-blown Medicaid change that Iowa just did in its history. So it's been a real work in progress. And I'm on three of the oversight committees, three. And I'm telling you, the fear was that they were going to make a lot of money, and instead of people getting helped in Iowa, they were going to make huge profits. Well, after the first quarter, they all had lost money. What did they save us? And here's where the governor's coming from. He says they're doing well. Well, they saved about $20 million. We would have normally spent $364 million in the first quarter. We spent $342 million. So they're not making any money, and they're saving money, which was the governor's intention all along. He didn't ask the legislature, by the way, and I better.
Candidate.
Thanks, Mark.
Suriani.
Yes, it's definitely a tough thing. It's coming down more and more just with all the mandating and everything, but it's really going to come down, like they said, a lot of oversight, and we really have to hold them accountable while making sure we're choosing the right providers for it. So it really comes down to the communications with the company and really holding them to the standard of care and the insurance that they're promising. So I really think when it comes down to it, we need to be looking over all their policies and making sure that nothing is going to get by and that the claims aren't going to get denied and that hospitals and private citizens aren't going to be denied all the coverage and everything for what they're paying for.
Thank you. Thank you. Moving on to the supervisors, our next question. Although not your decision, the closure of Mallard View has created a greater strain on the rental housing market. What should the supervisor's role be in creating additional rental housing capacity? And we'll start off again with Eugene Miners.
You want to repeat that question?
Although not your decision, the closure of Mallard View has created a greater strain on the rental housing market. What should the county supervisor's role be in creating additional rental housing capacity?
You know, I suppose that's going to be something that we'll have to look at every project that comes up and see what is viable and what isn't. You know, it is probably not been the county's objective to be involved in housing at this point. We've been involved with stuff like with New Hope and places like that where we're doing more for people of need and stuff, but not as regular housing. I would say we probably need to promote the private sector to do more with housing.
Okay. Supervisor Bach?
Yes, the closure of Mallard View slated for the end of this year is causing some issues. Our first and highest priority was the people who are living there, and the supervisors have assisted in what we could. I know there were some furnishings that some of the residents who lived there wanted to take with them, and we all agreed that that would be fine. Specifically, your question is, what role should we take in as far as creating more housing for them? At this time, Family Resource Center is combining with Mallard View, or taking them over, and they are in the hunt for housing for some of these clients. And obviously, or specifically, they have not asked us for any help at all, so I'm not sure how serious it is, since the people in charge of finding the housing haven't even talk to us about it. But I think the market will take care of itself. Hopefully they'll be able to find it, and if the people who are on the hunt for housing can't find it, I'm sure they'll approach us and we'll work with them. But the private sector has a lot to do with the housing.
Thank you. Candidate Ruggles?
The Mallard View closing is really, really a bad situation, but the giving of the things that we do have that we really have no need for and they have a great need for, that's been one thing. I think individual situations are going to have to be looked at. As a whole, I don't think the county is going to get involved with buying houses or getting in that market. One thing at a time, if there's something that they need, I think we're very approachable. I think I've been in several of the meetings, and these guys are very good. They will help whatever they can. But they have to kind of keep the tax dollar in mind. It's a tough one. But, yes, I'm very much for any individual problem that they have or need or housing. If they want to come forward and explain it all to us, I'm willing to listen and see if we can work something out for them.
Thank you. We'll move on to the sheriff election. And what recommendations do you have to improve the safety of the jail and address the items of concern in the study that was recently completed? Sheriff Pingree.
Well, the jail's a tough situation. The courthouse was built, well, it's 50 years old. We're having the anniversary next week for it. So the jail's that old also. It's outdated, and the security issues are hard to address there. If anybody's ever been on that floor of the courthouse, there are, I think, 5 points of entry on that floor. With the size of the jail, a lot of stuff is stored across the hallway, so the jailers have to come out to go get property for the inmates and stuff. And there's basically no security. Anybody can enter that during daytime hours. Used to be on weekends. The courthouse might be open, the meeting room or something. So it's just almost impossible to address that safety issue there.
Second part of the question was, just as you had stated, there's safety issues, so I think you addressed all of those.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. All right, for Auditor, Courtney, there has been talk about purchasing a new file moderating system program. How would this program benefit the county?
That was a program that was offered by our IT department. I don't feel qualified to answer that. That was an IT program that was brought up during a Board of Supervisors meeting.
Okay. Well, thank you. All right, we'll head back up here to the state and the House and Senate campaign. With the state, your opinion on statewide minimum wage increase. And we'll start with Representative Best.
That's a tough one because I think everybody out there wants to do the best we can for the folks that aren't making a great deal of money. And I think something reasonable would be okay. But the thing you have to look at is with the raise in the minimum wage, what are you doing for 17-year-olds who want a summer job and the company that has that summer job for them? The value isn't going to be $12 an hour or $10.50. The value is probably minimum wage. And so these kids may not even get a job because there is no, the employers have the option of just saying, okay, we're not going to do it. And so I think what you have to look at is how it's going to affect the economy and how those people that are on minimum wage will be affected if it's raised dramatically. I think very small, modest amounts are in order. I know that it hasn't been anything done since, I can't tell you the year, but I know inflation, it sure hasn't kept up with inflation. So I think that it's something that I'm willing to take a look at.
Thank you. Candidate Myers.
Looking over history, Mr. Best is correct. The minimum wage hasn't increased in, I believe, over a decade and a half. I think, though, if you walk into any convenience store, grocery store, or even out to Walmart, you're going to find that it's not a whole lot of high school kids in there working anymore. It's going to be your retired and people that are unable to get any other jobs. I always held the philosophy that minimum wage should be tied into the cost of living increases because the cost of your products have already gone up. It's your wages that don't keep up with your products. Johnson County has enacted a minimum wage, and they're doing it over a 3-year, 4-year step. Polk County just enacted that. I'd like to see the state of Iowa follow suit, and it doesn't need to take big jumps, but I think it should at least be tied into the cost of living increases. Thank you.
Thank you.
Statewide minimum wage. I've heard a lot of discussion from other lawmakers on this issue, so it will be probably one of the bigger issues of this next legislature. Right now, there are counties in Iowa that are setting increases in minimum wage on their own. And there are even Des Moines, I think, just this week, or maybe yesterday it was, that they passed a bill that made the minimum wage $10, and there were some other caveats to what they were doing there. But I don't think that we can do that on a county-by-county basis and have a state that is conducive and good for business. And so I think the state will step in and set a new minimum wage. I could vote for $7, I think, without a problem, but to go up as high as 10 in one jump is going to put a lot of our mental health workforces in jeopardy because there's just, with the Medicaid problem, there isn't the money there to spend.
Thank you. Candidate Suriani.
Thank you. I wish we had a lot more time to talk about this because there are tons and tons of variables with this. I don't believe in a state-mandated minimum wage just because each community is different, night and day difference. If you come and get a job here versus a job, say, in Storm Lake, we're a very large meatpacking plant town up there, and so average pays up there are $18 to $20 an hour, and a lot of local and small businesses can't really compete with those wages. So I think bringing up a minimum wage across the board is really going to end up hurting everybody, especially the people that are trying to get entry-level positions. Those are the people that it's going to be affecting the most. I know everybody wants better pay, but it's not a feasible thing. And I really think it needs to be back in the hands of employers because I don't think we should be telling people the lowest amount that they can pay an employee. I really think that needs to be the employer's decision. And that's the way of weeding out employers to see who's good and who's a bad employer. We should be putting the people in charge of deciding who they want to work for and who's going to survive in the market.
Thank you. Our next question for the supervisors. There is always talk about saving taxpayer dollars. Have you considered foregoing or reducing supervisor compensation of salary, insurance, and retirement for a more minimal compensation, such as city council members in the county. And to that, I will start with Supervisor Miners.
Well, that could be considered, but I, in rightfully, I think that when you look at what the time that the supervisors put in versus city councils and stuff, with all our subcommittees and stuff, that we would be very ungrossly compensated if we did that. I'm not saying that it's not a good job, pay and stuff, but at the same time, if we went with what city council's got, it would be, we'd be under grossly compensated. I would not be in favor.
Supervisor Bach?
Sure. No, I'm not in favor of it either. And there's a lot of things involved in the budget. The results of that would have very little effect on the budget. If you want me to talk about some important things about the budget, I'd be glad to. But the question was, should we reduce supervisor salary? Anyone who's county supervisor spends a lot of time, and it's a lot of flexible time. It's not the easiest part, perhaps, is the Monday morning meetings, because you're there at 9 o'clock every Monday morning. You can plan on it. The more difficult part happens all during the week when all these meetings pop up, when all these people call, when all the things you have to do. And it really is detraction from whatever your occupation is. You about have to be self-employed to be a county supervisor. If you would diminish the pay, I think you would also diminish the quality of people who apply for the position. And Carroll is too good of a county to have that happen.
Thank you. Candidate Ruggles?
You know, when I first started in on this, I probably would have agreed with that statement. After I've watched the meetings and been to the sub-meetings and the sub-meetings of the sub-meetings, I'm beginning to, Neil is absolutely correct. You need to be virtually self-employed, or it's a job, full-time job. It appears that there's a few hours a month or a few hours a week. There's a lot more to this if you want to do it correctly. And I'm also with Neil. I'm afraid that our quality of people would slowly diminish. I think the people that really care would stick in for a while. But as they get older and decide to get out, I'm not sure we get the quality people in we need.
Okay. Thank you. Moving on to the sheriff. As we see an increase in violent crime targeting law enforcement officers throughout the nation, what are you doing to proactively address this on the local level?
I wake up each day and thank God we live where we do. We're not at inner city. I don't deal with inner city problems. Thank goodness our violent crime rate isn't very high here. It hasn't affected our officers. We do take steps. We have our in-car video cameras. We have body-worn cameras. We have great equipment, but we're not an inner city, and all I can say is I'm glad we're not.
Thank you. Courtney, I don't have any other questions for you at this time, so I'm going to move back up here to the state and for the Senate and Representative candidates. And for Representative Best, the urban and rural division in Iowa seems to be growing, a perfect example being the DOT office closure in Carroll. What are you doing to ensure the strength and vitality of communities in your district?
That's an ongoing conversation, and it's something that I think we, as a legislature, struggle with. The urbanites are definitely becoming more powerful, and the only thing you can do, really, is as leadership, and hopefully as the leader that I would like to be if I'm reelected, do things, become a person who works across the aisles, works with Democrats and Republicans, and hopefully as you get in there longer, and my goal, if elected, would be to be the transportation chairman. And hopefully with something like that, there would be the opportunity to be able to speak for rural Iowa. And that's just on the transportation. I know a lot of things are being done with education and STEM, and how STEM will help get some of these young kids to think about staying in the area. And to all you students here that are from Carroll or Kemper, think about that. You know, think about, instead of thinking about can't wait to get out of Carroll and go to college, think about the things that you could do around here. And STEM gives you that opportunity. It's working with, and STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. And what it does is it brings businesses and kids together so the kids learn what they can do, how they can stay in their community and be a vital part of their community and possibly make a good living. A good living in Carroll, Iowa. And everybody thinks we need to move away because we're going to make a lot of money. Skilled positions will pay. And skilled positions, if you stay in this area, will pay. So think about that.
Thank you. And kind of putting that spin, because you haven't been there during the DOT closure, Candidate Myers, what would you do to strengthen the vitality of communities in the district?
I think the biggest thing that you need to have is opportunities. Right now with closing of services is one thing, but I think part of the defection into the metro areas is the fact that there is an opportunity for young people to stay. Over the past 15, 20 years in patrolling, I've noticed that we have less and less farm places. Everything has gone more corporate. And what you're going to have is as the rural areas decline, your student population is going to decline, which causes your budget problems. But you also don't have the opportunity for the kids to stay in the area. And unfortunately, the DOT just closed the services not only of the driver's license, but now they're closing services for roads and repairs. And that's going to also affect the rural areas.
Thank you. Senator Sigebart.
Thanks, Adam. Urban versus rural. Representative Best said that thank the kids that were here this evening and because they're our future. That's true, but their future in Iowa now means they move to Des Moines and take a job in Des Moines instead of staying right here and doing that. So what do we have to incentivize business to locate in our rural areas. And when I said that a couple days ago up in Storm Lake at a facility up there, one of the ladies there came and says, well, we kind of like to keep our place here a secret because we don't want a lot of people coming in. Well, that we're not going to survive because the only way we can pay our bills and have better schools is to grow our economy here. And when it costs more for property tax in downtown Des Moines than it does in New York City, something was out of whack. And so the first thing that I was able to vote for was a property tax for commercial property in Iowa in 2013. I was very happy to do that. And that was the first significant change we've made to property taxes in Iowa since in many years.
Thank you.
Ding the bell.
All right. Candidate Suriani.
Thank you. I think I feel pretty qualified to answer this because I am in that age group. I'm in my 20s still, and I've grown up here, and I've seen the struggle that people in my age group have. A lot of the people up on the stage here don't necessarily understand that because they either have roots here or they have established jobs and careers that have been handed down for them from retiring people. But a lot of that we don't have the opportunities for, and we are lacking housing because it's a lot harder to get a house mortgage unless you have family or someone to co-sign for you, as well as there's not the jobs available. So like Mark said, we need to be incentivizing people to bring jobs here, not just meatpacking plant jobs or not just working at a restaurant. We need actually industries to come here and industries that people want to stay in and people that want to learn through the colleges and get skills and work in higher jobs and higher paying jobs. We really need to be looking to that, or we're going to see it become a ghost town more and more each and every day.
Thank you. We're running a little bit closer to our time frame, so we're going to be focusing a lot of our questions now on our contested races. And we are at the top of the hour. You're listening to 1380 KCIM, Carroll, Iowa. Our next question is for Representative Best. In the future, if the legislator passes funding for our rural schools and the governor vetoes that funding, will you oppose the governor's veto and fight for funding for our school districts?
So the question is, if the governor were to veto the what the legislature comes up with, what we set?
Yep.
Yeah, I'd strongly consider that, because we set that, and since we set the funding, I'm assuming that everybody is on board with what the funding would be. If the governor were to veto it, I think we'd have to look at that as a possibility. At the same time, there are a lot of things that we have to do. You know, there's a lot of things that go into that, including the fact that it's a budget that, as long as we're continuing, I think, to fund schools the way we have been, with the largest percentage of the new growth going to the schools, I think the governor is on board with that, and I think it would be very unlikely that the governor would veto that.
Okay, thank you. Representative Meyer, I will give you that same question. If in the future the legislature passes funding for our rural schools and the governor vetoes that funding, will you oppose the governor's veto and fight for funding our school districts?
Well, since education needs to be a priority in the state, and they're already violating the state law by not having the budget accomplished, they absolutely need to go against the governor and push to get the education systems and the funding in place. Otherwise, they're just going to keep working backwards and backwards, and things won't get accomplished.
Thank you. Senator Sigebart?
If the governor vetoes school funding, well, if it passed the legislature, and I'm looking forward to this next session because I think we're going to have a legislature that has two houses that agree, the Senate and the House, because of the leadership that will get elected this election. I think that if that's the case and the governor vetoes it, the governor's in the position where he has to look at the whole world, the big picture, so to speak, and decide whether Iowa can really, six times since 2006, the state has not made good on their commitments to school funding. And that's what he's thinking about. If he's vetoing, he's assuming he cannot fund what the legislature has promised. But I have high hopes, being on the Appropriation Committee, we will know. We will have the money in the bank. We've always done business pay-as-you-go and not made loans. And so we'll have the money in the bank to fulfill our commitments.
Thank you. Candidate Suriani.
Thank you. It really comes down to, like a lot of the candidates up here have said, if it gets through legislature and it gets to the governor and he vetoes it, I would be interested in hearing why his reasoning to vetoing it is. It could be that the budget isn't balanced, and we might have to rework it, but I definitely guarantee that if it's on the legislature first and foremost to get a good proposal through to the governor to make it so that he doesn't veto it, if he does, then it's really on the legislature, and so we really have to work together to make sure we're appropriately funding all of the school districts, as well as creating a balanced budget and not using more money than we're promised, and we're not taking out any loans or anything like that.
All right, thank you. I'm going to start right back over. Iowa's natural resources, especially its water resources, are at a critical point. What action at the state level would you support to ensure clean water in our rivers and lakes? Representative Best.
A bill that was talked about last year did pass the House, and it didn't make it through the Senate. Would have appropriated $477.9 million between now and the year 2029 for water quality. I was in support of that, and what that did is it took $232 million from RIF, and then it earmarked $25.9 million per year from water meter taxes. And what you're doing when you do something like that is you're taking money that is going into the general fund and you're just earmarking it for water quality. I think that's a start, and it's a conversation. I think there's other options that are available, but to me that made a lot of sense, because I think everybody in this room knows that we have to do something. And right now, not a whole lot's being done. And I also believe that there has to be measurable things. We have to work with Iowa State. We have to know if we're making progress or not, because if we're just going blind and everybody's doing their own thing, it's not going to be as effective. We need a plan.
Thank you. Candidate Myers?
I think as far as the water quality, obviously we're having issues with the runoffs going into the rivers and ending up down in Des Moines. I know that there's a NRCS and several of the area farmers around Carroll, Sac, and Calhoun County, and I'm sure it's pretty much statewide, they're putting down what's called cover crop. And prior to harvesting the fields, they are putting down a wheat or a rye. And what they're trying to do is prevent the topsoil from blowing away any farther and also help reducing the runoff. I'm not an expert on the water quality, and I would defer that question to the experts at Iowa State or a research firm. Thank you.
Senator Sigebart.
Supporting clean water. Well, in my opening remarks, I referred to supporting the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy. Now, this is a strategy that has been proposed and been utilized by the IDALS, the Iowa Department of Ag Land Stewardship. Thank you, sir. what they're doing is taking state funds and going to farmers where we think the problem lies, and I'm not sure the problem all lies with farmers, but they're offering matching funds to farmers, which put up near the same amount in projects to stabilize the soil. The problem occurs, of course, when you have 45 inches of rain. Did you hear that we've had 45 inches of rain in Iowa across the state? We didn't have that kind of problem 5 years ago when we were averaging more like 25 inches of rain per year. So it's a problem that, and I like that strategy. And Iowa is leading the way as far as the Louisiana epoxy problem. None of the other states are doing anything yet. They're looking at Iowa to see how we're going to do it. So,
Candidate Suriani.
Thank you. It's definitely a problem that's being addressed currently. I applaud the clean water initiative that's going through. There's been lots and lots of talk coming about and lots of people looking into the problems that we're having with the watersheds being polluted in different areas and running down towards Des Moines. So I've seen lots of the research in the different areas in which are heavily affecting and running towards the other areas. So I think they're really beginning to find out who the main culprits are. So I think it's going to be holding those areas accountable and refocusing funds to make sure that the higher area watersheds are being appropriately made sure that they're clean so that they're not affecting it downstream. Because if we're focusing our efforts in more of the downstream areas, we're really not addressing the main problem that's further upstream to it.
Thank you. We have time for one more question, and I'm going to ask this to all. What can you bring to this office that no one else could? We'll start with Representative Best.
I think the most important thing is the experience of having 2 years of work in the legislature, and the fact that I have worked with a lot of folks on both sides of the aisle, and the thing that I think makes a person an effective legislator is being able to listen to the people that you don't agree with and listen to the people that you do agree with and coming up with a consensus and being open and honest about where you're at and transparent. And in my 2 years so far, the first year, you're pretty much down there and you just got to listen and you got to learn. And the second year has been much better for me, and I would look forward to going back down there and taking some leadership positions. And I think everybody up here has probably a little bit of a competitive nature, because when you run for an office, you have to have a little bit of that in you. I'm very competitive, and I want to work and be the best leader I can for this district at the State House. So thank you.
Candidate Myers? What will set you apart What can you bring to this office that no one else could?
I think the thing that I bring to the office is a career-long dedication to public service. I didn't decide to run for this office with any political aspirations. One of the things I am disappointed about tonight is that we didn't have the opportunity to talk about the mental health system. The state has essentially decimated the mental health system, and I'm not interested in partisan politics. I'm just looking for some solutions. And the more opportunity that I have to speak with people is the more I'm getting educated on deficiencies in the education system, the public works systems, and other departments. As I've always done over my entire career, service to the public has always come first over the needs of myself.
What can I bring to this office that nobody else can? Well, the last 4 years, my party was in the minority in the Senate. And as Brian was saying, he works well with the other party. You had to work well with the other party if you were going to accomplish anything. And I think I did work well with the other party. I had some things I was able to accomplish that I was pretty proud of that are kind of minor, because none of the legislation from the minority party ever gets brought before the House to even, or the Senate to speak about. It just didn't happen. So I'm really looking forward to this next session so I can be in the position that Brian has been in for 2 years. He's actually had the opportunity to run bills. And in my case, for 4 years, any bills that you would present never had the opportunity to be run or even on the floor. So I think I can work well with the other party, even though they're going to have to work with me now. That's my plan.
Candidate Suriani.
Thank you. I think one of my main attributions is going to be my youth. I bring a different perspective that a lot of the legislature doesn't have right now. I feel that they're really disassociated with the growing population of the youth, as well as I don't belong to either of the major parties, so I won't be bending a knee to one party's policies if they need something pushed through. My first and foremost opinion is going to be that of the people of the state of Iowa and those in my district. I will be in the best interest for you, not only economically, but also socially. I will have no agendas. I don't have any lobbyists funding me. I'm completely self-funded. I don't take money from big associations, associations like the NRA that I agree with. They won't even talk to people like me because I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I can't be bought and sold. I'm here for you.
Thank you. We're actually going to, as it is a little after the 10 minute of the hour, we're going to start with closing statements. And if we could, we'll just go down to the other end of the table. And Courtney, would you like to please start us off with your closing statement?
Sure. Thanks, Adam. I would like to again thank the Carroll Chamber for hosting this forum. I would like to remind you all of some important dates upcoming. Saturday, October 29th is voter pre-registration deadline. Auditor's office is open from 8 to 5. Friday, November 4th is the last day to request an absentee by mail. Saturday, November 5th, the auditor's office is open from 8 to 5 for absentee voting and other election business. Monday, November 7th is the last day to vote absentee in person. And, of course, Tuesday, November 8th is Election Day. Polls are open from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Another reminder is the absentee ballots must be received before the polls close on Election Day or be postmarked Monday, November 7th or earlier and received by noon Monday, November 14th. I would appreciate anybody that has any questions regarding the auditor's office to contact me at any time. I would appreciate your vote on November 8th, and we'll continue to provide efficient and knowledgeable services to the citizens of Carroll County. Thank you.
Thank you, Courtney. Sheriff Pingree?
I would like to take the chance to thank the Chamber, all its members, and the media for sponsoring this forum and giving each of us a chance to define who we are as candidates. I take great pride in the fact that former Sheriff Bass had the confidence in me to recommend me for his position. I have always worked hard and will continue to do so to provide the highest degree of common sense law enforcement to Carroll County residents. For the voters who know neither my opponent or myself, I ask that you please do some research before you cast your ballot. I think you'll see that I'm the best qualified candidate for this position. I also would like to wish my opponent the best. It's unfortunate he couldn't be here tonight. His 40-plus year career in law enforcement is certainly noteworthy. Thank you, and I would ask for your vote in this election, and I truly look forward to serving the citizens of Carroll County.
Supervisor Ruggles.
Once again, thanks to the chamber and everybody that's been working hard for this. And I'll give special thanks to the candidates that are running. To put themselves out there and put their views forward is quite noteworthy. I really would appreciate your vote on November 8th.
Thank you. Candidate Bach.
Serving the people of Carroll County is an awesome responsibility. It's a challenge. It's an honor, and it's a privilege, and oftentimes very rewarding as well. Without a doubt, I would appreciate your vote, but I have more to ask. Before, during, and well after the election, I want to hear your suggestions on how to improve Carroll County. Nobody has a monopoly on the best ideas, and none of us knows more than all of us. When we work together, that's when we achieve our greatest accomplishments. It's with great optimism and enthusiasm that I look forward to working and for the people and serving the people of Carroll County in the future. Thank you for that opportunity.
Supervisor Miners.
Yes, again, I would like to thank the chamber for hosting this forum along with the media for their coverage. I would like to thank the citizens of Carroll County for allowing me this opportunity to serve them the last 16 years. And look forward to serving them another 4 years. I will be committed to the citizens of Carroll County always. I always do have an open door policy. I look for any comments and any suggestions that you may have, particularly on any issue that we are looking at any point in time. I would appreciate your support on November 8th, and thank you for your time.
Candidate Suriani.
First, I just want to thank everybody for coming out. I really believe that this year is going to be a record low for voter turnout just because of the polarizing presidential election. But I really, really believe that change comes at a local and state level. So I really want anybody that's here to make sure that you, your friends, and your family get out to the polls and maybe not vote for me. Vote for anybody and everybody. Vote down the ticket. Do not do straight party voting. It is that's how we get into trouble. We really need to be in charge of ourselves and look at all the candidates because it's going to be us that's representing you. So I very, very want you guys to go out. I have some rat cards out on the table there, as well as a lot of other candidates have different pamphlets and everything. Contact any of us. We are an open ear. I will get back to you immediately within the day. I want to hear from you. I want to discuss all the issues that we've covered and all the issues that we haven't covered. I am always open to be contacted, and I ask for your vote November 8th.
Thank you. Senator Sigebart.
Ronald Reagan once said when he ran for president the first time, I'm not going to hold my opponent's age against him. So even though I'm 40 years older than my opponent, I think I got a few steps left. Here's my goals for 2017. One is win my re-election and flip the Senate to a Republican Party majority. Then I want to keep the balanced state budget and don't spend more than we take in. I'd like to defund Planned Parenthood and offer more choices to women than just a Planned Parenthood death sentence. And I'd like to keep our redemption centers open and continue my support for small business and create more good-paying jobs in Iowa. And the community colleges are an integral part of that. We need to really team up with those guys because they do a marvelous job for getting our young people ready for the work climate. And lastly, my core principles are freedom, faith, and family. And I abide by the golden triangle of freedom, which goes like this. Freedom requires virtue. Virtue requires faith. And faith requires freedom. Thank you very much. Appreciate your vote.
Candidate Myers.
Again, I'd like to thank the chamber and everybody else that's listening tonight. I guess I'm unique compared to some of the other candidates. I believe everybody has their political views, their personal opinions. I disagree that once elected to office, I think everybody needs to work together in a nonpartisan manner, because in the end, what we're doing is serving the people that put us in the office. Regardless of your political party, I think we need to get back to the core issues. We need to take care of education. We need to take care of the mental health. And we need to get this Medicaid problem straightened out. I appreciate your support. Thank you.
Representative Best.
Okay. First of all, I want to thank my opponent. Ken and I now have something in common. We know what it's like to run for public office. And sometimes it can be very difficult, but I commend you for what you're doing and for getting out here and saying what you believe in. I believe, well, 2 years ago when I was making my final minute speech, I said that I would fight for the most vulnerable. And I believe those people are, for one, the unborn, children in the womb. And I have voted in favor of pro-life in the past, and I will continue to do that. Also, mental health. We have to look at mental health as a problem that a person has, but not as a character flaw. And I think in the past, when we were growing up, that was pretty common thing to do. We made fun of people who were different because of mental health issues. And for that reason, I believe as a state and as a society, we really need to look at this and say, it's a flaw that's not the fault of the person. And we have to get really serious about it in Iowa, because we are falling behind, and mental health is going to be a big part of what we need to do to make this state a great place to live. Thank you.
All right, very good. I am very committed to getting you guys out of here on time. So I just have a few things I want to say to wrap up here this evening. Candidates, very good job. Excellent content. We appreciate your thoroughness in answering and really addressing the questions that were put to you tonight. Adam Schwiers did an excellent job moderating for us. And thank you to those of you that are out here and that are listening live. We really appreciate you getting involved and understanding who it is that's going to represent you following this election. The questions, again, we appreciate those. We apologize for not getting through all of them. If you did submit one, certainly the candidates, as has been stated, are very, very willing to answer those questions. Carroll Broadcasting and Daily Times Herald, very much appreciate your coverage of this event tonight. KCIM putting us on live for those to listen at home. Our Chamber of Commerce Legislative Committee has worked hard to put this event together and also provide the candidate forums throughout the year. I just want to take a moment to recognize them. Our committee chair, Joel Lundstrom, John Brocklesby, Rob Cordes, Hubert Hageman, Greg Knowles, Gene Ludwig, Trish Roberts are all here tonight. Also, Jerry Jansen, Ed Smith, and Kim Winkleman are committee members. So again, thanks to all of you. Again, we very much appreciate you being here for the questions. Courtney kind of laid out our voting schedule. I was going to go over that a little bit, but certainly be a part of the process and get out and vote on November 8th. Again, thank you and have a great evening.
Thanks, Sharon.
Thank you. Nice to see you.